Well, turn over to the book of Genesis. That's where we're going to be today, and we're going to get caught up. For those of you that are visiting, we've been looking at the biblical history of the Middle East, and if you look at the scripture that we've been going through, and it's kind of meticulous right now, probably today, we're going to be spending a lot of time in Genesis and in the first five books or so. But once you lay this groundwork, probably next week we're going to start speeding through history. And if you have this groundwork laid first, then it makes a whole lot of sense when you put it all together, see what's going on over there, and you realize what God's been telling us for all these years. And so out of the book of Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy, Numbers, and Joshua is where we're going to be today, too. I'm going to show you how God has been transferring His covenant through His chosen line all these years, and I just want you to be sure that you know that God's been saying the exact same thing to His chosen people since day one. He hasn't changed. So when we talk about the land of Israel, God's been telling them that it's their land, and He's been telling them for 4,000 years. Okay? So as we go through this, it'll be more and more obvious. Just wanted to kind of talk about a couple things that were kind of fun to see. Two of the big meetings that happened between the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Mahmoud Abbas in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. Don't know the outcome of that totally yet. Then the quartet met in Jerusalem. Don't know the outcome of that yet. I really wonder. There's a couple of different things. Out of these meetings, we're not sure exactly what all is going to be decided, but they still have to do something with the Gaza Strip, who is now controlled by Hamas. I mean, they can't have a third country sitting off to the side with over 1 million Palestinians. Several thousand Palestinians have tried to get through, and some of them have gotten through the crossing into Egypt. Most of them want out of there because they know it's going to be a bad scene from here on out if something's not done. I don't know if Iran is going to come in and support them monetarily and make them look good. Don't know the outcome of all these things. Did you see, of course, what happened in London, in Scotland, the last couple of days? London, they found two cars packed with explosives. Hopefully that's all, but they found them before they were exploded. And then yesterday, a truck ran into the Scotland airport in Glasgow and caught on fire. Nobody was injured. Now then, have you read some of the possible reasons behind that? What?
Well, Salman Rushdie.
Okay. One of them is the possibility of Salman Rushdie. I don't know if you remember from, I don't know how, when all this started, when his life became in danger, but he wrote a book called The Satanic Verses. Now then, in the Quran, there are a group of verses that have always been known as the Satanic Verses. And the story is that Muhammad received revelation about these verses, wrote them down, later to find out that these verses were from Satan, and so he got new revelation to correct them. Well, that opens up a whole new ball of wax. Exactly which revelation. So anyway, he wrote this book about it. I haven't read the book or anything, but the day it was published, his life was on the line. There was a bounty on his head, and he deserved death. And so he's been living in hiding for years and years and years. Well, England knighted him. They granted him knighthood last week. So some of the supposition is that these things were from what England did with Salman Rushdie. Well, we don't know. Nobody's claimed them, though nobody's told the reason for doing these actions yet. The other reason is maybe somebody's showing Gordon Brown, the new prime minister who's in charge. They want to let him know that they're still out there, so don't expect anything. The other possibility is Tony Blair was just appointed as the Middle East envoy for the quartet to do some of the negotiations between the Palestinians and the Israelis. So maybe that's it. We don't know yet, but all these things usually have a deeper meaning behind them, and got to keep our eyes open. Yes?
The big gay parade in London.
Yeah, they had a big gay parade in London. Interesting, two weeks before, they had a giant one in Tel Aviv, in Israel, too, that got kind of nasty because Orthodox Jews protested against it, and it was a, but I don't know what that might have had to do with it. So, well, the other thing I want to tell you about, and I've gotten this email several different times, and I know several people in here have, and just to kind of let you know something, since we're talking about this, this email talks about Iraq in the Bible, talking about how in the Bible, most of the time when it talks about Babylon, they're talking about the area that we know as Iraq, okay? So all of this region, when the Jews were taken in captivity into Babylon, that's where they were taken. So, you know, it has a lot of historical, archaeological things listed in this email about Iraq and Babylon, and most of it is, yeah, it's true and everything. But the bad part is it winds up at the very end of the email with a verse out of the Quran. And it talks about the Quran chapter 9, verse 11. 9-11. Talks about a giant eagle swooping down on the desert and doing all this stuff. And so basically what they're saying is, you know, it was prophesied in the Quran that the United States would invade Iraq. Well, that verse isn't in the Quran. It's not. So if you get this email, read the first part of it with interest. The last part is wrong. Don't keep sending it through because that makes us look pretty bad, okay? So that scriptural reference out of the Quran is just wrong. So, okay, so today we're going to pick up with Jacob. And what we've shown is from Abraham to Isaac and Ishmael, and from Isaac to Jacob, the lineage, and what God is doing with his covenant through his chosen line. I showed you from the verses out of the Quran where the divergence, one of the divergences, but the main divergence between Judaism and Christianity and the Islamic faith is, because the Quran says it was Ishmael that was the chosen son who was taken up to be sacrificed, and if Ishmael was the chosen son, then the promise should flow through him, and therefore that land belongs to the Muslims, the Arabs, the Muslims. We know that the Bible says that the promise flowed through Isaac. Isaac was the son that was taken to be sacrificed, and therefore he was the chosen line, and that land belongs to the Jewish people. Okay, so that's a great divergence with the Quran and the Bible. There's a lot of other different things also, but we'll get into those later. So let's start in Genesis 28. Let's start with 28 first. We've seen that Isaac had two sons, Jacob and Esau, and that Jacob gained Esau's blessing. Esau was the oldest son, out of whom came the Edomites, the line of the Edomites, who also died out before Old Testament times came to an end. So the Edomites were gone, and he said that the older will serve the younger. And sure enough, Esau served Jacob. And again, God says, I'm going to choose the line I'm going to choose to carry my covenant, and it's going to be through Jacob, the younger son. That's in direct violation of Jewish tradition, who always says that it's the oldest son that inherits everything. God purposefully probably said, no, but I'm beyond tradition. Remember that. I'm going to flow my blessing through who I wish. So in Genesis 28:10, we know that Jacob received Isaac's earthly blessing by deception. With the help of his mother, he deceived Isaac into giving him Esau's blessing. So he got Isaac's earthly blessing, Jacob did. And then it says in Genesis 28:10, Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I've promised you. So where have we heard that before? It's almost word for word what God said to Abraham. He said, I'm giving you this land where you are. And he said, no matter where you're scattered, I'm going to bring you back to this land. It belongs to you and your descendants. I'm going to be there with you. Your descendants are going to be numerous. The exact same blessings. God's not changing. He's saying, he's telling the line how he's going to deal with them. Genesis 32, 22. And there is so much packed into all of these that we could spend weeks just on these individual verses and everything, but what I'm trying to do is just give you the high points so we can trace God's blessing through the proper people and see where it winds up. Genesis 32:22. That night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with man and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon," which is still true 3,500 years later. The Jews still don't do that. Okay, so we have Jacob wrestling with someone probably, you know, there's, like I said, we could spend a lot of time on here. The angel of the Lord, God himself, incarnate, had this wrestling match with Jacob, but he changed his name to Israel. So this is the first part, the first point where the word Israel comes into play. And what does Israel mean? Struggles with God, because you have struggled with God and men and have overcome. So I find it interesting that Israel was born, number one, in deception by Jacob deceiving his father for his earthly blessing and struggling with God for the spiritual blessing. But yet that is a picture of Israel throughout history, as we see through all the Old Testament. Israel struggling with God, struggling with their obedience and faithfulness to God, and yet overcoming all the obstacles that the Jewish people have gone through for centuries and centuries. So it's a pretty fitting description there. So Genesis 35:9. 35:9. It says, "After Jacob returned from Paddan Aram, God appeared to him again and blessed him. God said to him, 'Your name is Jacob, but you will no longer be called Jacob. Your name will be Israel.' So he named him Israel. And God said to him, 'I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and increase in number. A nation and a community of nations will come from you, and kings will come from your body. The land I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I also give to you. And I will give this land to your descendants after you.'" Well, there it is again, over and over and over. We see who the land is going to belong to. "Then God went up from him and at the place where he had talked with him. Jacob set up a stone pillar at the place where God had talked with him, and he poured out a drink offering on it. He also poured oil on it. Jacob called the place where God had talked with him Bethel." Bethel. Beth is the house of. El is the shortened term for God, Elohim. Referring to him as El, so the house of God. Just like Bethlehem is the house of bread. So Bethel still is in Israel today. That location is still there. So that's what happened. So again, the land belongs to Jacob and his descendants. And so he's following this blessing on down the line. Genesis 35:23, Jacob had 12 sons. It lists the 12 sons. These are the beginnings of the 12 tribes of Israel. Just like Ishmael had 12 tribes that became the Arab nations, Jacob had 12 sons that became the 12 tribes of Israel that became the nation of Israel. Okay? So that's how it all flows apart. Now then, look at Genesis 37. I want to show you something here that doesn't pop up a lot, but when it does, it's probably kind of substantial in that we see indications of what happened to Ishmael's descendants, okay? Now, go back just a little bit. The term Jew probably came from the tribe of Judah, or Judah, is how it's pronounced in Hebrew, probably shortened as Jew, began there. So the term for the Jewish people probably began with the tribe of Judah. Genesis 37:23. This is Joseph, one of Jacob's sons. And as we know the story, that he was a favored son. He got the coat of many colors. The brothers were all jealous because Joseph had these dreams, you know, where he saw them bowing down to him. And how ridiculous is that? And so they were kind of hateful toward him, and they wanted to kill him. Some of them wanted to kill him. Some of them didn't. So they didn't know what to do with Joseph. So in verse 23, it says, "So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty and there was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead." Now Gilead is east of the Jordan River, and the area we now know is like Jordan, the country of Jordan. "Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt." So here's a band of Ishmaelites wandering with their goods. They're traveling down to Egypt to trade. And then it says, "Judah said to his brothers, 'What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood.' His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt." Now, why would they talk about Ishmaelites and Midianites simultaneously, interchangeably? Any ideas? So where have you heard of Midian? The land of Midian. Anybody?
He's one of the sons of Abraham's layers.
One of the sons of Ishmael. Midian. Yeah, Genesis 25. Okay, now then, the other part about Midian that's important is, remember where Moses' father-in-law Jethro lived? The land of Midian. Moses spent 40 years there. So we know that that's in Saudi Arabia, today's Saudi Arabia. So now we see the interchangeable use between Ishmaelites, descendants of Ishmael, and maybe they're saying in the exact location of these people, their origination was from the land of Midian. But it's used interchangeably because they know they're all out of the same line. So here we have an example of a wandering band of nomadic people, probably from the area of Saudi Arabia that we know today, who were coming through up to the eastern side of the Jordan River on their way down to Egypt. And Joseph got sold to them, and that's how Joseph wound up in Egypt, which is important because who else wound up in Egypt? Jacob and the rest of his sons, and therefore the Israelite people who were in bondage, just like God said, for 430 years, that's how it all happened, right there. And it took a wandering band of Ishmaelites to kind of start it all off. So God's still using them. God still uses, just like he said, "I'm going to bless Ishmael too, and they're going to play a part in all this." Our little minds, we could have never figured that one out. So God took care of it. So Jacob and his sons follow Joseph into Egypt later, and the beginning of their bondage was probably somewhere around 1800 BC, somewhere in there that they went into bondage in Egypt, and the Israelites began their servitude to the Pharaoh. Now then, turn to Genesis 49. This is toward the end of Jacob's life. And Jacob is going through and blessing each of his sons and giving each of the tribes these special blessings. But the blessing I want to concentrate on is the blessing to his son Judah, because it's very important for us Christians. He says in verse 8, "Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, O Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse him? The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations is his. He will tether his donkey to a vine, his colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk." Who in the world is he talking about and describing?
Jesus.
God started right here saying, here's where my son is going to come from. I've already picked a line. I know his genealogical chart from day one, and he's going to be from the line of Judah, L-I-N-E. Jesus was known as the Lion, L-I-O-N, of Judah. He's referred to as the Lion of Judah. Yes?
Did Jacob understand what he was saying
here? I don't think so. Okay. I think most of these authors were being revealed this, but they didn't fully understand what God had planned 2,000 years later. So he's given this blessing to his son, directly to him, but in effect fulfilling God's prophecy for the coming of the Messiah. Because the Jewish people have always seen this section of verses as messianic prophecy. They've known that the Messiah is going to come from the lineage of Judah also. Well, look at the rest of this. Look at the rest of this. How about tethering his donkey to the vine, his colt to the choicest? What does that have to do with Jesus? Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry. That's the perfect description right there of what happened with Jesus and telling his disciples, go get me that donkey to ride in on. And that's exactly what they did. His robe is, will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes, the blood of the cross, staining his garments, staining his robe. It's all there. All these piece parts are there. The interesting things, some more of the things are, the scepter will not depart from Judah until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations is his. The scepter will not depart from Judah. Yep.
I agree with you, and yet, Uncle, when Jacob's saying he will tether his donkey to a vine, he will wash his garments in wine, I mean, what do you think he was saying?
He was probably telling Judah that he's going to be blessed with, you know, with livestock and vineyards and, I mean, physical things like that. I don't know the full meaning behind it, but evidently it was a good blessing. I'm glad Dad told me that. But they understood. Now then, he also said that the scepter's not going to... What's a scepter? A ruling staff. So the ruler of the scepter will not depart from Judah. The line of Judah will be the line of rulers. Well, guess who came out of the line of Judah for ruling the nation of Israel? King David, and on down the line, Jesus, the scepter will not depart. Now, if you put that together, yes, Mindy?
My translation says until Shiloh comes. What does that mean?
I don't know.
It says the scepter will not depart until Shiloh comes.
There's a word, let's see, I can't think what that...
Peace?
What's that?
Shiloh, the root
Sounds familiar. There seems like I've read more, I don't know. I can't remember right now. Oh, it does. Christ. Okay. Well, there's probably more behind the Hebrew. So I'll have to check into that. So the scepter will not depart from Judah. Now then, it's fun to look at the word scepter throughout the Bible. In Psalm 2, it talks about the Messiah ruling with an iron scepter. So David talks about that in Psalm 2. Then in Revelation, three different times, it says that Jesus rules with an iron scepter. And he rules all the nations, just like it says. So when it talks about the scepter will not depart from Judah until he comes to whom it belongs, then the scepter stays permanently because Jesus is the eternal ruler. So it's all right there in the Genesis. 2,000 years before Christ, God's saying, here's how it's going to work, y'all. Here's what the Messiah is going to do, what he's going to look like. Here's how it's going to flow. I've got the genealogical charts all figured out. So that's in Genesis 49. Then I want to catch up on these genealogical charts. First of all, I showed you a chart of Noah's three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, through the line of Ham and Canaan, came the Canaanites. Through the line of Ham and Mizraim came the Philistines. So that was a line over on the side of Ham. So on the line of Shem came the Semites, or the Shemites, and those are the Arab and the Jewish people, the Semitic people. And from that line, we followed it down to Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, and then Isaac and Jacob. So now I want to pick up here, following this line from Shem to Abraham, Ishmael, Isaac, Jacob, and Esau. Out of Esau came the Edomites. The Edomites died out before the end of the Old Testament. So the Edomite descent was gone. And then out of Isaac came Jacob, who was called Israel. Out of Israel came the 12 tribes of Israel. And then in Judah, chapter 49 of Genesis talks about the descendancy of the line of Judah, the scepter not departing. And so on down, and some of these descendancies leave out names, but these are the important people that are associated here. Talks about out of that Judah line comes this man named Jesse. Isaiah 11 talks about the stump of Jesse producing the Messiah out of the stump of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David. Jeremiah 23 and several other places talks about the descendancy of David, the branch of David being the Messiah line. So out of David, and you can look that up in Jeremiah 23, being the line of the Messiah. And so therefore, when you get to Jesus, look in Matthew 1 and Luke 3, all of a sudden you see the descendancies of Jesus traced all the way back, all the way to Abraham, all the way through all of these lines. And so they're just saying, Jesus fits the bill to the T. Jesus fits all of these qualifications for all the messianic prophecy of the Old Testament. Okay? So, I got these charts, and the front, well, it depends on which way you hold it is the front, but anyway, starting out with the three sons of Noah and their descendants, and then on the back, I've taken Noah to Shem and Abraham and the descendants that are up on here. So just a little something to help you kind of understand, and if these get to the back and we need more, well, we can make them, but should be enough. So anyway, that kind of helps you picture this in your mind. And like I say, there's a lot of the people that I've left out just to keep it kind of simple. But if you go back through the Bible, you can trace all these lines through. Yeah, Bill?
When did the Abraham nation or Arab nations die out?
Well, the Arab nations haven't. The Arabs, the descendants of Ishmael and the descendants of Jacob are the two longest living cultures in the world. They are the Arabs and the Jews. So it's the Edomites that died out from Esau, and it was the Canaanites from Ham that died out. And both of them, everything that I've read, they were gone before the end of the Old Testament, by the time the Greeks and Romans came in. So they've basically gone. But the Arabs and the Jews, they're still here, still going at it. Okay. So let's look at Exodus 23, because the next thing that happens is that as the Jews, the Israelites, go into bondage in Egypt, just like God said in Genesis 15, it says that your people, Abraham, are going to be in a foreign country for four generations, and after that I will bring you back to this land and you will possess it. So now then, after they have been in bondage in Egypt for 430 years. They come out of Egypt with great wealth, just like God said in Genesis 15. He said, whenever you come out, you're going to have this great wealth. And sure enough, the Egyptians gave them all the gold and silver and jewels and everything that they, jewelry that they had, just to get rid of the Israelites so we could get rid of the frogs and the blood and the lice and just get them out of here. And so they sent them on their way with great wealth, just like God said. So he is bringing them out of Egypt and toward the promised land. And in about 1400 BC is where they are going to wind up on the east bank of the Jordan River looking into the promised land. So on the way, God tells Moses something in Exodus 23, starting with verse 20. God tells Moses, "See, I'm sending an angel ahead of you to guard you along the way and to bring you to the place I've prepared. Pay attention to him and listen to what he says. Do not rebel against him. He will not forgive your rebellion since my name is in him." Well, I could just play with that one for two or three weeks right there. Okay, so here's an angel that God is sending, and he says, if you rebel, he will not forgive your rebellion. Who can forgive sin? God. Okay? So God says, my name is in him. My name is in this angel. So evidently, this is God incarnate, somehow the angel of God being with Moses and the Israelites. So then he says, if you listen carefully to what he says and do all that I say, I will be an enemy to your enemies and will oppose those who oppose you. Where have we heard that before? Abraham. I will curse those who curse you. I will bless those who bless you. And he's telling Moses, I will oppose those who oppose you. I'm going to take care of you. My angel will go ahead of you and bring you into the land of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hivites, and Jebusites, and I will wipe them out. Where have we heard those names before? They're the descendants of Ham, the Canaanites. He says, they're in the land now, but on your way in, I'm going to go in ahead of you and start pushing them out. Remember, I promised this land to you. Just like he told Abraham, do not bow down before their gods or worship them or follow their practices. You must demolish them and break their sacred stones to pieces. Worship the Lord your God, and his blessing will be on your food and water. I will take away sickness from among you, and none will miscarry or be barren in your land. I will give you a full lifespan. I will send my terror ahead of you and throw into confusion every nation you encounter. I will make all your enemies turn their backs and run. I will send the hornet ahead of you to drive out the Hivites, Canaanites, and Hittites out of your way, but I will not drive them out in a single year because the land would become desolate and the wild animals too numerous for you. Little by little, I will drive them out before you until you have increased enough to take possession of the land. What's he telling them there? Be patient. This isn't going to happen overnight. He says, if you'll just be patient, everything's going to work out just fine. But why would he tell them that? What's the importance of taking their time?
It's a trust issue.
It's a trust issue, number one, because you know, wouldn't it be easier, God, if you just went in and wiped them all out? Wouldn't that be a lot better? Nod your head. Yes, it would.
Also a testing of their faithfulness.
A testing of their faithfulness, yep. Okay, so he's saying it's not going to happen the first year. Why not? Why didn't God just go in and take them out besides trust and obedience? Just take them out because he knew that they were going to be run out. He tells them why.
In verse 29, he says, I will not drive them out in a single year because the land will become desolate, wild animals too numerous.
Okay, so he's saying until you increase in numbers, I could drive all these people out. But then the land will go to waste because you wouldn't have enough people there to manage it. So I'm going to take it little by little, and as you grow, I'll take out some more people. Now then we know that Israel, the nation of Israel, didn't always follow God. Sometimes they did what he said and wiped these people out, which we just think is horrible. But this is what God is telling them. God has seen the end of these generations, and he knows that these people are evil. They're not going to get any better. So he's saying, now you go in and wipe these people out, every bit of them, because if you don't, you're going to be tempted to follow their ways. Well, we know that the times that Israel didn't follow their ways, that they got in trouble. And they fought these people from then on. If they had followed him up front, obeyed him up front, they wouldn't have had the trouble that they did. So God tells Moses this, and then he tells him that he's going to drive these people out. So as God brings the Israelites up to the eastern bank of the Jordan River, Moses is on top of Mount Nebo looking over the land of Israel, and God says, here's all this land that I'm giving you. However, Moses, you're not going to be able to go in. You're going to die here, and Joshua is going to take them across, the Israelites across. So look at Deuteronomy 7. Verse 1, when the Lord your God brings you into the land you're entering to possess and drives out before you many nations, Hittites, Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Go back to Genesis 10, verse 15. That's the list of the descendants of Ham, the Canaanites. Seven nations larger and stronger than you. And when the Lord your God has delivered them over to you and you have defeated them, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them and show them no mercy. Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons, for they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. And the Lord's anger will burn against you and will quickly destroy you. This is what you are to do to them. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, cut down their Asherah poles, and burn their idols in the fire. For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession. The Lord did not set his affection on you and choose you because you were more numerous than other peoples, for you are the fewest of all peoples. But it was because the Lord loved you and kept the oath he swore to your forefathers that he brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the land of slavery, from the power of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord your God is God. He is the faithful God, keeping his covenant of love to 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commands. So he says, I'm bringing you into this land. You're going to push these people out, but you need to get rid of them totally or you're going to be tempted. Well, we know exactly that Israel, they didn't obey him, and that's exactly what happened. They intermarried. They fell into worshiping their gods. They went into idol worship. They did all these things, just like God warned them not to do. So there is the picture of him saying, here's who's in the land, and they're going to be out, and you're going to take possession of the land that I promised you. Okay? So now then, the next step is Joshua 1. And this is God's telling Joshua what's going to happen from this point forward. Because Moses has died. Joshua is going to lead the Israelites across. And here's how it's going to work. So see if you see any similarities. Now, and also, listen to how many times it talks about in here either God or Joshua talking about this land being possessed by the Israelites. Okay? Just kind of listen. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give to them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert, that's down in the Sinai, to Lebanon to the north, from the great river Euphrates, the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country, to the great sea, and on the west. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. So Joshua ordered the officers of the people, go through the camp and tell the people, get your supplies ready. 3 days from now, you will cross the Jordan here to go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God is giving you for your own. But to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, three of the Israelite tribes, Joshua said, remember the command that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you. The Lord your God is giving you rest and has granted you this land. Your wives, your children, and your livestock may stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan River. We better look at that. Land east of the Jordan River is to be given to Israel. But all your fighting men, fully armed, must cross over ahead of your brothers. You are to help your brothers until the Lord gives them rest, as he has done for you, and until they too have taken possession of the land that the Lord your God is giving them. After that, you may go back and occupy your own land, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you east of the Jordan toward the sunrise. Then they answered Joshua, whatever you have commanded us, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your word and does not obey your words, whatever you may command them, will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. Well, now, wait a minute. There's land east of the Jordan that belongs to some of the tribes of Israel. That's interesting. Okay, right there, 6 times I counted were references to God saying, I'm giving you this land, or Joshua said, we're taking possession of this land. Now, so what's important about this? Well, I looked back through from Genesis to Joshua, and real quick counted over 60 times that God says, I'm giving you this land. It's a land of your inheritance. You're going to possess this land over and over and over. But the kicker is that, like right here in Joshua 1, I said there were 6 times. I only counted that as once. So if all of this occurred in a single chapter, I only counted it as once. So there are hundreds of times in the Old Testament where God relates over and over and over. This land is going to be yours. It's going to be for your descendants forever. And it's going to flow through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the tribes of Israel. This land belongs to them. Over and over, he says the exact same thing. All right, so let's look at this map right quick. In Numbers 34, if you really want to dig in and look at the exact borders of the promised land, God lays it all out. Here's the borders of the promised land. Now then, this kind of multicolored area, starting right here, multicolored up to that blue, that's kind of modern day Israel. Okay? So this solid pink, which starts here, down here in the Sinai Peninsula, here's the Gaza Strip today, this is down in Egypt, and all of this east of the Jordan River through the nation of Jordan today, up into Syria and all of Lebanon. What he's saying is, that's God's land. Huh. That's quite a bit bigger than what we know Israel today, right? Well, I don't know how God's going to do it. He says that belongs to the Jewish people. I don't know how it's going to work, but I tend to think that it still belongs to the Jewish people, and somehow it's going to return. I don't know how it's going to work. God does. That's all that matters. So here's the boundaries of the promised land compared to the nation of Israel today. So what about this land east of the Jordan and these tribes? Well, here is how the tribes were allocated all of the promised land. And over to the east of the Jordan River, you have Reuben down to the south by the Dead Sea. North is Gad, and then the split tribe of Manasseh. You have Manasseh over to the west of the Jordan River, and then this big plot of land on the east side of the Jordan River for Manasseh too. So that's exactly what he's talking about that we just read. That there's three of the tribes that are going to inherit land on the east side of the Jordan River. They're going to send their fighting men across with the Israelites to help them, you know, occupy the land. But then after that, they're free to go home to the east side of the Jordan River. So look at how big this land is that was promised to the Israelites compared to what we know as Israel today. It's amazing. It's amazing to see all of that. Somehow, God's got plans. Don't know how it's going to work. But it all belongs to them, God said. Any questions or comments? Yes?
It's probably stupid, but can you trace what is Israel today? What is Israel today?
I've got a pointer. Let me go back to this other map. It shows a little bit more of it. Here's the border of Israel today with Egypt. This is Egypt over here, the Sinai. It's the southern border. This is the Negev Desert. Over here is the border of Egypt coming up to the Dead Sea along the Jordan River to the Sea of Galilee. Here's the Golan Heights. And this blue part right here is the northern border. Well, actually, the northern border of Israel is this dotted line right here. But they occupied a little bit of that in Lebanon. And then, of course, down here. So it's just this part right here. So this pink area and all of this pink area all the way up here is occupied by somebody else right now, but God says, yeah, but that's not the way it's going to be. So, that's the difference. Yep.
It says here from the Euphrates to the Red Sea.
Yeah. The Euphrates runs right up in here. I don't know if it's on this other map. But it extends pretty much all the way up to the Euphrates. So, it's a lot of territory that Israel doesn't own today. Anything else? Yep.
Where do you really think we are as far as the end?
And you know, we can't know that. She's saying how close to the end do we think we are? I don't have a clue. Maybe next weekend, maybe 50 years. I don't know. I'll keep showing you things along as we go along here. That the things that I keep seeing are that we are seeing things today that haven't happened for 2,000 years. There's no getting around that. And I'll keep showing you these things that are going on. A lot of it's happening in Israel by the Jewish people because they're doing what they're told to do by Old Testament scripture. They're going along just like they should be doing according to Jewish law. From our viewpoint, we see this as, oh my goodness, here's another step that's complete before Jesus returns. And some of these things haven't happened for 2,000 years. There's no other way to see it. So, do I think that we're getting closer and closer? Yeah, I do, but it still may be another generation. I don't know how to peg it. But as I go through here, I'll show you things that you just got to go, man, that's interesting. Why is that happening now? Yep.
Well, before the second coming, is Israel supposed to occupy this land again as part of the Jordan
Sea? I don't know. He's saying before Jesus comes, are they going to be occupying all this extra land? You know, my thought is, God said that that's the land, the promised land. God said that that belongs to the Jewish people. I tend to think that somehow he's going to restore it. Don't know how. How does land that belongs to Syria and Jordan, Lebanon, go back to the ownership of Israel? I don't know. But he said it was theirs forever. So, I don't know.
Jim,
yes, sir.
Revelation makes two powerful statements, doesn't it? At the very end it says, "Behold, I am coming soon."
Yes.
But 2,000 years ago, God was soon.
Yep, that's true.
So he's on his way. Yep. That's what that means to him. And when the New Jerusalem 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles. That's a whole lot more than that.
That's a lot more than that.
Yes.
That's right.
That's
good.
A huge chunk.
The descriptions in Revelation are, you know, the New Jerusalem is a lot larger than even this. 1,500 miles cubed. Okay? Anything else? It just gets funner. Next week, like I say, we're going to be starting to zoom through history because we've laid the foundation now. And now we're going to start looking at the highlights of Israel's history. And then we'll probably, I don't know if we'll get to it next week, but certainly a week after that, okay, now that we've looked all this, what does it look like in modern times? And then when you see what's going on in the modern day, you're going to go, well, of course, that's what God said in Genesis. And then it kind of opens your eyes. Anything else? Let's have a word of prayer. God, we thank you so much that you have given us your word. And we thank you that you have given us the example of how you have dealt with the nation of Israel, because we know that how you dealt with your chosen people is how you, in large part, deal with us, with our faithfulness, with our obedience, with our disobedience, with our rebellion. God, you're unchanging. You have always said that it was a matter of faith, a matter of love and obedience. And through your Son, Jesus Christ, who has given us eternal life, we still rely on our faith in you. God, we thank you that you have given us these examples, that we may be examples for other people. As they see us, we can only point to you as an example of your power and mercy. We ask that we become the examples that you want us to be every day. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank y'all.